Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm so proud that you decided to come back and listen. Thank you. If you're new here, welcome to the podcast for the very first time. I'm so proud and honored that you wanted to listen to this recording today. So at the top of the podcast, I always like to give out information. And that would be for number one, if you're in any kind of danger, please do not listen to the podcast. Hang up, dial 911, get a safety plan in place. And then also, if you just need to reach out to an advocate and get some information, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline number at 1-800-799-7233. And also, you can go online to domesticshelters.org. They have an amazing list of different organizations, shelters, people that you need to reach out to in your neck of the woods. Also, if you have organizations in your state, in which you should have, always reach out to your crisis line, your local state crisis lines. That's where you would receive the majority of your help or assistance. So I'm very excited to introduce today's guest. She is a survivor and author. And if I have her permission, her name is Kathleen M. Klein. If I have her permission, we'll start doing her episode and her recording. Hi, Kathleen.
Yes, ma'am.
So
hi,
do I have
how
your...
are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I am good.
So I have your permission to record today.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So tell my listeners a little bit about you and a little bit about your story and what you do in your life.
So I am someone who loves to play with words, following in my grandfather's footsteps. And I ended up being married to a man for 12 years who, about 12 years in, I found out that there were 12 lies on my marriage certificate, ironically, with the 12, 12, and 12. And that's just on the marriage certificate. But during that relationship, during that 12 years of marriage, I was the recipient of verbal, emotional, psychological, financial, and physical abuse. As I got free and I utilized my writing skills, and I don't mean to offend anybody, but I was asked by my creator to not let my successful getting free go to waste. So I used my combined skills of writing and finally processing the abuse and such to write a memoir called My Life in the Dark, A Marriage Built on Lies.
You know, I'm so fascinated about the fact that he was able to get away with lying. Did he ever gain any time for that?
That will be in the next book, but
oh,
yes.
Okay.
So he did get, and it's in My Life in the Dark. I do share that he was arrested twice and deported.
Wow.
And then years later, he came back into the United States and, married a fourth wife, and between she and I, we made sure we had enough information to prove he was in the States against the United States laws. And he was put in federal prison for 9 months.
Wow.
So I know for being illegal in the United States and for having possession of firearms with domestic violence record.
Wow. So I'm kind of interested in knowing, and a lot of the listeners probably haven't read your book yet, and I don't want you to give everything away, but kind of like walk people through, like, when you started noticing there was actual lies, like when that actually started happening.
Oh, I didn't. It's on page 7. And it's funny because one of my readers says, I missed the lies. Oh, page 7. But it was, he left. And I thought he was going wacko. And so I was trying to get him medical help.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he had PTSD really bad. And it wasn't. It was lies, really lots.
Wow, you just went through a whole lot.
Yes,
So
ma'am.
with just not only that relationship, you've been through a lot more than this. Am I right to say
Yes,
that?
yes,
Yeah.
yes, you are right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm still like just so perplexed by how he was able to do that and get away with it.
This is how he was. He moved us a lot. And my in-laws helped him lie.
Wow. Well, yeah, I mean, of course they did.
They slept in my bed. They ate my food. And they did not sit him down in front of me and tell him to tell me the truth. You know, like there were four other children that I knew nothing about,
Wow.
that did not get support, that his first wife had to shoulder all that burden with.
Right.
I'm like, because I thought my children were his first, second, and third, and I found out they were his fourth, fifth, and sixth. No,
Wow.
I'm sorry, fifth, sixth, and seventh. I can't count today.
You
Yeah.
know, a lot of times abusers, their families take up for them. They do that. They take up for the abusive son or daughter or whatever. You know, they just make it to be okay. Like it's fine, you know. In a lot of cases that happens. Parents take
It
wind up taking up for their children even when they are in the wrong and they're abusive. And that's
Yeah.
sad. I mean, it's really a sad thing. It really is.
Yes, because they perpetuate stuff.
Right,
I
absolutely.
think my nephew told me after I found out the truth. Well, grandma said to not rock the boat. And I'm like, grandma was wrong.
Right.
Okay, grandma was wrong.
Yeah. How old were your
Yeah.
children when all this happened?
Ethan was 10, Emma was 8, and Bella was 4 and a half, five.
Wow, so they were just little ones.
Babies.
Wow, absolutely. So, how long have you been free from this relationship?
It is 2024, so it would be 23 and a half years.
Wow.
23, 23 and a half years, yeah. But not free.
Right.
That's when I left the ranch.
Okay.
He dragged the divorce on, of course, for a couple of years. And then he continued his stalking after the divorce.
Oh, wow.
So technically, I have been free for about 5 to 7 years since he passed away.
Oh, gotcha. So he's gone now. So he passed away.
Yes.
How was that? Like, because I've had women who are going through domestic violence, severe domestic violence, in a sense of, you know, they had just left their abuser, right? And one lady, her abuser died recently. And she hasn't been gone but maybe a month from the abuse. Yeah. And so how did that feel to you whenever he did die?
I jumped up and down. I'm not gonna lie. And yet my sleeping patterns were still off. Because, I mean, I sleep with the TV on because my overprotective brain does not give up.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So then, I mean, and I have a TV on in the room, and I think I'd actually stopped using it a little bit. And then when he died, my brain went protection mode again because I wasn't sure if he really died. I mean,
Right.
my daughter, our daughter, our oldest daughter, Emma, she actually texted me two sentences and said, "Mike is dead, full stop. And that is all, or that is it, period." And that's all. That's how I got the notice.
Wow.
Yeah. So and I took a few months, and then I called a or yeah, I called a relative, an in-law, to confirm that he had died. So I didn't trust him.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but there is relief. I don't have to look over my shoulder every day, but he died at 20 years after the, you know, stalking and stuff began.
Yeah. So, I mean, you had to live all those years looking over your shoulder, scared because he was constantly bothering you, constantly stalking you.
Yes, and making comments to the kids. Oh, I know where you're living. I'll see you soon.
Oh, gosh.
And he always made good on his what other people thought were idle threats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you have a protection order against him all them years?
I did. From the first day that I applied for my protection order, which was also about the same time that I first admitted to the cops I was an abuse victim. Mm-hmm. I have gotten restraining orders, protection orders, both temporary and more extensions in three or four states. And then I got a permanent one in my divorce, and only supervised visitation for the children in the divorce as well.
So would you like, I don't know, what's the state that I live in, you know, I'm from Alabama, you know,
yeah.
I know that it's difficult for women to keep protection orders in place. I know that there's lifetime protection orders, but I know that a lot of judges are kind of like, well, I'm going to give you, you know, this amount of time, and then we're going to come back and revisit this. Was that something that happened to you ever with your protection orders?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You had to keep
going
back.
So my temporary one, and then I went back and 2 weeks literally after I escaped or got the children and myself out, my father and I had to drive back there.
Wow.
To go to a hearing. And his attorney tried to intimidate me. That's in the book. And then had to go back for divorce hearings. And when the judge found in Colorado, which is where my divorce was from, and the judge found out that the protection order was being now I was getting a divorce, he said, there's a temporary protection order in the divorce papers until that divorce is finalized. And then I repeatedly asked for an extension when it came to the divorce isn't final.
Right.
So that's a game I found that some attorneys have their clients play. But
yeah.
Then each state that I moved to, because I went on the run with the children, I made sure that I had my restraining order recognized by that state.
Right. Yeah. Was that hard? Yeah. Was that hard to do for you?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Every single time I had to revisit it, it was difficult.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, was like each state, I know each state is different. The rules are different for each state. Each attorney, each lawyer, judge, they're uh-huh. different. So there's just different standards for each entire entity. I think that when it comes to the justice system,
There is, and sadly, by the time I got to Ohio, because I ended up moving my children 10 times in 3 years and, 1,500 miles for three of those jumps and 2,200 miles for the last one, the judge used to represent perpetrators.
Yeah.
So wow. He did not believe in mental and psychological abuse. And that is the only time I was denied a protection order for my children and myself.
Wow.
Yeah. Made me so angry.
Oh,
he
yeah.
would not accept it into the state. But the cops in that area totally did. It was an emotional and mental battle for myself as well.
Right. Absolutely, yeah. And I can imagine your children having to go through that and that being their dad. You know, that
yes.
was probably very difficult for them to go through that. Okay. I talk to a lot of women who go through family court, protection order hearings. And, you know, it's so difficult for women to plead their cases, you know, like
mm-hmm.
to be believed. And I think that, you know, that's a lot of what I fought for is women to be believed, you know?
Yes.
Because there's just nothing like being a victim and somebody not believing you, not believing
Right?
that you're a victim, not believing that, you know, you went through this ordeal with this person. You know, just seeing the, like, whatever is there in black and white. Like,
Yeah.
not knowing the history, not knowing the past, not knowing what's happened up until this point, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what would you tell women today, like, that are going through protection order hearings? What advice would you give to the women out there?
Go to your family crisis centers, your DV centers. Call me. I don't care. To help you know how to fill those out. One of the things I was blessed to be able to write was how I went through and did my protection order, because I didn't know how to do them.
Yeah. Yeah.
The cops were the ones that told me, go to the family crisis center and here's where it is.
Yeah.
I was very blessed to have some wonderful people around me. But when I came out here to California during one of my safety runs, I did not know how to find the safe house.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to seek assistance.
Yeah. And
I know it's difficult, but we got to do it.
Yeah, I think a lot of women are just honestly afraid to reach out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then once they do, sometimes when women reach out, I feel like they feel like they, if they get someone that's probably not as compassionate as they should be, then they give up and that's it.
Yes.
And you know, yeah. I mean, rightfully so, because had I would have been reaching out to someone for assistance back when I was going through what I was going through, had I would have reached someone who wasn't as compassionate as maybe, say, you or I, you know, it would have deterred me from getting assistance. Then I wouldn't have
right,
wanted to reach.
Because you're looking for
yeah.
help and then
right.
it's not there.
Yeah.
yeah.
So then you're just like, well, you know, nobody will help me. I can't get anywhere here. You know, why would I even reach out to these people again? Or why would I go over here and reach out to these people? Because they're just going to be the same way. So,
right.
you know, I really think that crisis centers, organizations in different states, you know, we really need to have women. And there are men who work in these crisis centers
yes.
as well. You know, just be on our best compassionate behavior, you know. I think that your first impression of someone means a lot, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And that's one of the things I know that my first person who noticed I was in that kind of a situation, I loved it that she did not get mad at me, that it took me 5 years to find my personal strength to move my children myself.
Yeah.
And she's still my friend, even to this day. And it was because she had been through some situations.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is when I went to the formal safe house, they said to me, I may have to leave if we have a man call in who is in need of a safe house. I've got to go because we do have men in our safe house. And I guess I got really big, buggy eyed. And she says, oh, no, not this house. We have a separate man's safe house.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and as much as I love that you and I really focus on women, I don't want anybody to ever forget that men get in this situation too.
Absolutely. And you know, I've worked with some men and there's a man who actually is on the podcast. And I have a really great friend who has done this work and put in the time, and he has worked at crisis centers and things like that. And he's been one of my main supporters throughout my podcasting career, my advocacy career. But yes, definitely. There are men out here who get abused too. You know, we can't forget the stories like the murder trial of, I keep remembering her name and I don't want to say the murderer's name first.
Right.
You know, but murders happen and women murder men through domestic violence. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say her name. I can just say her last name. Aries. What do you remember his name?
No, let me look it up.
Yeah, look his name up, because I really didn't want to say her name first. But, you know, she's been made notorious, right? Because she was a murderer, and they make murderers notorious because of what they've done, infamous or whatever they call that.
They get kind of publicized
and sparkled out here, and it's really majorly messed up that they get that much attention, you know.
There's one right there. Was that in Arizona?
I think so. I believe so. Yeah.
So it was Travis Alexander.
Yes, Travis Alexander.
Absolutely. By Jody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that was so heartbreaking to me. I mean,
yeah,
so heartbreaking. He seemed like a very sweet young man, and you know, he just didn't realize the danger he was in. She was stalking him. You know, I think he was afraid, but I just don't think he was that afraid. You know, like, because he was this guy, and you know, he was the man, and I don't feel like he thought his life was in danger with her.
No, and you know, you figure when you're in the shower, that's in your own home, that's one of your safe spots.
Right, absolutely, yeah. But she was so far obsessed stalking him and being obsessed with him that she was like, well, if I can't have you, no one else can.
Yeah, and while it seems that societally and such, women are less likely to do that, nowadays, it's changing.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I would agree with that 100%. It's changing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
I mean, I mean, you know, we advocate for women, and I am a survivor. You are also a survivor. But there are men out here that are struggling also. And men will not step up and get help like a woman will.
No, when I was having my book in review, I have a weekly review group, writer's group, and when I was on chapter 13, and I'm never going to forget this, it was a couple minutes before the meeting was starting, and the man in the group for the day said, can I ask you a general question? I said, absolutely. And he said, did you ever feel stupid for staying so long? And two people must have been signing on, because I heard them go, you know, because it was on Zoom. It was during COVID. And I said, yeah, I did. He says, me too.
Huh. Wow.
And nobody, now when he said that, I went, oh, yeah, your soft personality, your gentleness, I could see how you would become an us.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I totally support just getting free. And you know, our first passion is for women and children, but what if there's the guys and the children?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And there is, that's the thing. And people just kind of like, and especially the male ideology or whatever, however you call it. It's kind of like, you're a man, you got to be this tough guy, you got to be this burly man, and you got to protect yourself, and you got to do this. Well, there's some women out there that are pretty doggone, you know, they got a lot of, you know.
Aggressive girls.
They're very aggressive and can be very physically violent and, you know, can be emotionally and psychologically psychotic.
I mean, we have less women's prisons, which speaks to that, but we still have women's prisons for a reason.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I don't feel like we're going to get any hate for this podcast, but I mean, you know, it's just not talked about near enough to me. And I'm glad that you brought it up. I'm very glad you brought it up.
Thank you.
Yeah, because we need to put awareness out there for men, just like we do for women. I think that it's a lot of the, you know, the numbers. You know what I'm saying?
It is.
So.
And while our children, while we're protecting ourselves, while we're getting hit or whatever, as much as as much as I did not know for certain if my son at the age of four or five saw his father hit me in the back of the head, he did. He told me later, and I bawled my eyes out because how much it hurt my son. But now I have to read. That was my lesson of saying, now I need to tell my children this is unacceptable behavior, and it's going to be for exampled by more than me just taking them away from that situation.
Right. Yeah.
And I had to repeat it like when they got old enough. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's difficult.
It is very difficult. You know, and children a lot of times mimic what they grow up seeing, you know.
Right.
They do. I mean, that's just a thing. And we just have to keep educating young people about domestic violence. And, you know, I am a 100% advocate for education and young people, the youth, educating our youth about domestic violence, healthy relationships, you know, and I think that every podcast or a lot of the podcasts that I do mention that I am 100% for educating our youth. It's something that, you know, I was 18, I was 17 when I got pregnant. I was 18 when I got involved and got married to this guy. And right. So I was just a kid, you know what I mean? And I came fresh out of high school into a domestic violence relationship. And
right.
Had I would have been educated and well, you know, taught about domestic violence, that may not have happened. You know, I may have went a different route. So
well, and so what I hear you saying is it wasn't in your family prior to that.
Right.
Like with me.
Yeah.
I mean, my dad was, because he's in his late 80s now. So men were socially more demonstrative, more
sure.
the controlling in the house.
Yeah.
And now he wasn't physically abusive, but he's had a sharp tongue.
Yeah.
But that's, well, I had to say that, but that's it. And then I go into a relationship where somebody else perpetuates much worse.
Sure.
Or at least worse.
Well, I was raised by my mom. And
okay.
I mean, even though my mother was a very strict disciplinary, like she had to be the one to be the disciplinary, and mother wasn't very soft or easy either. But, you know, I can remember my mom went through domestic violence when I was 10 years old, but I was totally mm-hmm. against it. I didn't witness it happen, but I remember seeing my mom carry a black eye. And,
yes.
But I didn't know that that was domestic violence. You know what
sure.
I'm saying? Like, I didn't know that's what it was even called, right? So, but maybe in a way I was like going through life thinking, not thinking about that. You know, I don't know.
Well, we didn't talk about it before.
Sure. No, it was never brought up.
That's also, we as a society, we did not talk about this stuff.
Mm-mm. No.
Mm-mm. And so I think that, we are better aware, and being aware is because we've been educated. And you have just brought me to a thought of, I would like to tell the, you know, go to the schools and say, let me talk on this in just, you know, in September, October, because it's Domestic Violence Month, right?
Sure.
In October.
Yeah.
So you just gave me that idea because I'm willing to rip the Band-Aid off, let the scab show, and even bleed without bleeding on people, you know, but
right.
bleed on the stage and show that people are vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We are at 29 minutes. It's about to cut us off. Tell the folks
okay.
where they can find your book.
Oh, okay. You guys, it's on Amazon. It's called My Life in the Dark, A Marriage Built on Lies. And you can get it via Kindle or the print. I found a couple of typos that I was able to fix today. So I'm going to upload that on Kindle.
Absolutely.
But they're just little ones, you know, and because
right.
I checked it and I'm like, oh my goodness, I am so glad I fixed that,
yeah.
You know, and then you can, I'm on Facebook, Kathleen M. Klein, and then I have a Kathleen's Dragonfly Desk page on WordPress.
Okay.
That's my blog. So, and I'm on, you know, I'm that girl. I'm on TikTok. You know, so people can find me. And if you have any questions or you'd like to reach out and just say hi, or you need someone to talk to, I'm here.
Well, thank you, Kathleen. We're going to say bye. Bye, y'all. because we're fixing to be hung up on. Bye, everyone.